I'm John O'Loughlin. Welcome to McDuff Lives Podcast.
It's just rare that you find a book that just says, this is the path that we need to follow, is to read this book, understand this book, pick it apart, follow the footnotes, do whatever you need to do, because this is the path to saving our country and saving our health. Hello, everyone. I'm John O'Loughlin. Welcome to McDuff Lives. Glad to have you with me as we continue our readings from The Sleeper Agent by A.W. Finnegan. The Rise of Lyme Disease, Chronic Illness, and the Great Imitator Antigens of Biological Warfare. We're ready to get started now with Chapter 15, The Legacy of a Sleeper Agent, and we are beginning on page 253. Weaponized ticks, Lyme disease, and co-infections under the caption, Traub's Stealth Weapons on American Shores. We have already covered in earlier chapters how Traub weaponized Lyme disease and weaponized ticks with an additional blood parasites and rickettsia to produce the highly immunosuppressive effects and immune tolerance. There is also evidence that the Leptospira spirochete was included in these ticks and were isolated from the bullseye rash in early Lyme patients. Enzel Reams had been working with Leptospira spirochetes, and Traub had learned of these combined infections, such as Bartonella, Babesia, and spirochetes, in 1939 with Carl Beller, when Beller published a chapter on the nature of these diseases. Neurotropic vesicular stomatitis virus, VSV. From the time of Traub's arrival in 1949 and subsequent work with the virus of vesicular stomatitis, outbreaks of VSV in humans began to occur at areas where he worked, supervised, and instructed others for experiments with his pathogens, like the University of Wisconsin, the Beltsville Station of the USDA, and finally at Plum Island in 1954. Michael C. Carroll has noted the outbreak in his book on Plum Island, where an infected cow coughed in a lab worker's face, and soon the lab worker became sick with an infection of VSV. However, this was not the first exposure to Traub's new strain of stomatitis. Several of Traub's colleagues at the USDA and military had studied the outbreak, first starting at the University of Wisconsin, after five workers there contracted it in 1949 and 1950, while cases from the Beltsville Station from 1949 to 1958 had 100 human cases of vesicular stomatitis at the USDA. Traub had been involved with some of the work on Newcastle disease tested at farms owned by the University of Wisconsin, and Traub's work on VSV at Beltsville had established he was there teaching the USDA researchers here how to grow purified antigen in chicken eggs. Traub's signature neurotropic qualities were mentioned, resulting in cases of undiagnosed encephalitis. In the large majority of researchers and animal handlers, 70 to 96% had antibodies to VSV. 57% of those who had antibodies had symptoms of illness, while 54 human cases of vesicular stomatitis disease were diagnosed, showing the stealth outbreaks and infection with VSV was already spreading freely among the USDA. Isn't that breathtaking? You know, and again, Beltsville is just one of the many communities on the Washington Beltway. You know, I did live there for a little while, but the main thing is we've always known that there was this huge, huge agricultural farm thing. We used to think that they grew experimental marijuana up there. As a matter of fact, I think that actually is well-founded. But as far as biological weapons, the idea of the USDA being victim to sabotage of the USDA itself infecting humans with BSV while they're working there under the supervision of the man who created the humanized VSV virus. If I have that correct, it really is astounding. lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, LCM, in humans and hamsters. In the mid to late 1960s, and occurring again in the mid-1970s, several outbreaks of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, LCM, virus occurred in animal colonies and laboratory personnel around New York and Maryland. In 1966, several scientists published, quote, epidemic non-meningitic lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus infection, an outbreak in a population of medical personnel, unquote. This outbreak occurred in Bethesda, Maryland. Traub had been gone for some time at this point, but he was taking trips back to the USA, and this virus could maintain itself through many generations. Some of these scientists, such as Wallace P. Rowe, who worked with Traub early at MMRI, Naval Medical Research Institute, and conducted tests with him, were sending strains of LCM to Germany after his return. A second publication, quote, laboratory studies of a lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus outbreak in man and laboratory animals, unquote, appeared in 1975, just as Lyme disease was being acknowledged by public health officials in the small town of Old Lyme, Connecticut. More alarming, these LCM outbreaks were not confined to these areas. On April 14, 1974, the New York Times published, quote, hamsters killed to prevent the spread of mild meningitis, unquote, where CDC officials were frantically destroying infected hamsters around the country in a rather sudden display of concern, clearly because hamsters were being used as source material in vaccine manufacturing at the time. It was generally used in vaccine research and in tissue cultures used in general academic and scientific research. Duck virus enteritis. Virtually the same time as the outbreak of LCM virus was occurring at New York and Maryland, ducks around Long Island and nearby Plum Island soon began to die in large numbers from the duck plague or duck virus enteritis, a herpes virus that affects ducks and waterfowl, first seen in the 1930s and 1940s. This could have been a secondary infection following an infection with spirochetes or other agents, causing an immunosuppressive reaction and reawakening the sleeping viruses like duck herpes virus. How many animals were infected at this time is unknown, but the epidemic was a significant loss to Long Island restaurants that served the duck as a dish. Again, there's a footnote for everything, and that is footnote number 82 in this chapter. Newcastle disease virus. While the duck plague, duck herpes virus 1, was destroying the duck population in the Long Island Sound, there had been simultaneous outbreaks across the United States of exotic Newcastle disease, occurring in California. And even before the duck plague hit Long Island ducks, there were reports of ducks dying from a virulent exotic Newcastle disease just years apart. This was certainly a terrain Traub was familiar with, and much of his career during the war centered on avian influenza, fowl plague, i.e. Newcastle disease, or in German, Geflügelpest. As noted earlier in this chapter, tests conducted in the Midwest gave rise to several outbreaks of Newcastle disease through vaccination campaigns conducted around the time of Traub's employment. Foot and mouth disease. In 1978, Plum Island Animal Disease Center experienced a major outbreak of foot and mouth disease virus on the island, in which the entire stock of animals at the island had to be euthanized and incinerated. It was known that the FMD vaccines used live and inactivated virus vaccines back then, and both could revert to active virulence. And Traub had brought his freeze-dried cultures from Germany and used them in Navy work and for the USDA. Traub was already approved by the Food and Agricultural Organization to set up other governments to produce FMD vaccine. It was also known back in Germany by Traub and his Inselreims staff that freeze-dried virus in vaccines could potentiate a delayed reversion back to virulent form after a considerable lapse of time. Traub briefly mentioned these difficulties in the 1954 paper in French. Inzel Reams had already been looking into this vulnerability during World War II, and Traub's freeze-dried FMD cultures that were brought to America would have been used to set up Plum Island with Traub's method for producing FMD vaccines, as he was doing for the Navy. What is particularly telling is that after the FMD outbreak occurred at Plum Island, they decided to hire a biotech company, Genentech, to create a new FMD vaccine. And one of their project scientists gave an interview about it, lending more insight into the state of FDM, I'm sure that means FMD, vaccines at the time. Quote, "What they told us was that the vaccines out there were not particularly effective in that they wouldn't give complete protection, and they would sometimes give rise to new outbreaks because the virus was not totally killed. It is an RNA virus which is constantly evolving. Much like the AIDS virus, it is hard to get a good vaccine for an antigen that is constantly evolving," unquote. Echoing that sentiment, Dr. J.J. Callis, heading Plum Island at the time, told the NIH officials involved in the rolling out of recombinant DNA technologies that producing FMD vaccines and their use could result in new outbreaks. Quote, he suggested that recombinant technology could produce vaccine at a considerably less expense as a stable product without risk of the virus escaping from factories. Many outbreaks today result from incompletely inactivated vaccine or escape of the virus from factories, unquote. Immune tolerance and the 1960 Nobel Prize. In 1960, as federal investigations of Traub's administration and presidency of the Institute in Tübingen were reaching their peak, the Nobel Prize for Immune Tolerance was awarded to two scientists, British researcher Peter Medawar and Australian researcher Frank McFarlane Burnett. It is interesting to note several things about immune tolerance in regard to this award. First, that these two scientists were never nominated together by anyone, nor did they work together. Secondly, the Nobel Prize for Immune Tolerance did not include that which occurs due to infectious disease, but instead it was cited in regard to the same conditions seen in organ transplants. Moreover, there was no emphasis on infectious disease or of Eric Traub's work on LCM virus, as it was Eric Traub who had described the immune tolerance phenomenon in LCM virus nearly 25 years earlier. Traub had already begun to map out the foundation of chronic disease and persistent infections due to the immune system being disabled and made it his life's work. However, the use of what Traub discovered was applied to the destruction of life rather than the pursuit of health. The entire phenomenon of immune tolerance, which those affected today might know by other names such as long COVID, chronic Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, myalgic encephalomyelitis, fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, Gulf War illness, and all of the controversial forms of chronic disease that have become a stigma to the afflicted are all forms of immunodeficiency brought about by a class of antigen with a certain lipid profile, and its effects serve as the basis of the strategic biological weapons that disable the immune system. In other words, the antigen or surface protein is the weapon, the most crippling aspect of the agents Traub weaponized. In many ways, this antigen served as a perversion of nature, an abomination of science, geared to its very worst ideal, using viruses and microbes as weapons to create complex diseases that were extremely hard to treat, very confusing to diagnose, and very expensive to manage. Furthermore, there was always the unsettling reality that much of the West's reliance on vaccines to deal with even the most minor infectious diseases were actually exacerbating and even bringing on the condition itself, due to the same manner of burning out the immune system. As it exhausted the immune system from repeated exposure to toxic antigen, the immune system eventually reaches a state of immune deficiency synonymous with immune tolerance. The immune system cannot respond appropriately in a state of exhaustion, which allows the reawakening of dormant viruses, which then go to work destroying the brain and the body from head to toe, much like Traub's LCM virus in his Rockefeller mice. The injection of foreign protein into his mice to reactivate LCM virus was no different than the injection of a spike protein or antigen used in numerous vaccines. While the infectious origins of Traub's immune tolerance were being largely ignored from the Western approach to public health, several had taken notice of what happened and how Traub's findings were disregarded. First, American virologist John Hotchin had praised Traub in his monograph, quote, persistent and slow virus infections, unquote, with the opening page, quote, to Eric Traub, who started the whole thing. One of Traub's proteges during World War II, Zvonimir Dinter, had also acknowledged Traub's discovery having been glossed over by the 1960 Nobel Prize. In Dinter's 1984 paper, quote, personal experiences with Eric Traub, end quote. Traub, who started the whole thing. Traub's talent soon began after he began research at Princeton, the Rockefeller Institute branch. The topic to which he dedicated his work in the first place was the behavior of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus in mice. A number of communications that began in Science, capitalized, and continued in the Journal of Experimental Medicine, and which are generally regarded as classical today, where, quote, many pioneering series of investigations in many of the key biological properties of the virus were established, unquote. Point one, when Burnett and Medawar received the Nobel Prize in 1960 for their seminal immunological work, I, as a veterinarian and as Traub's colleague, would have liked to see that he, too, had participated in the prize, because what Traub already described in 1936 and 1939 was the mode of origin of the condition, which was later baptized as immune tolerance and which represented a pillar of Burnett's clone selective theory. Point two, the American researcher Hotchkin showed appreciation for Traub's dedication by giving him his monograph with the words, to Eric Traub, who started the whole thing. It was clear that Traub's findings on the science of immune tolerance in chronic persistent infections and the neurological disease that comes with it were conveniently being ignored by the establishment for all that it implied. This kind of discovery would turn conventional medicine and immunology on its head, disrupting a very large and prestigious medical industrial complex. Needless to say, Traub's work and focus becomes a doorway to many other unfortunate aspects of modern science, medicine, and aspects of human nature. Around this time in Eric Traub's career, he returned to the study of LCM virus, and in the years 1960 to 1963, he published some of his best papers on the chronic disease in persistent infections with LCM virus, resulting in the complex phenomenon immune tolerance. Particularly noteworthy is Traub's 1960 paper, quote, observations on immunological tolerance and immunity in mice infected congenitally with the virus of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, unquote. Because it is here we find some of the best descriptions of the stealth mechanisms that underlie many of the controversial chronic diseases plaguing Americans today. With patients who are very ill with some of the most debilitating symptoms, yet their healthcare providers are finding no signs of illness, no antibodies to disease agents, and no abnormal blood work. And based on this, they deny the complaints of the patients as illegitimate or psychosomatic. Quote, and this is from Traub's 1960 paper. Mice infected, and in parentheses, congenitally from mother to newborn, close parentheses, with LCM virus carry large amounts of active virus in their blood and organs for many months and discharge considerable quantities of the agent with their secretions and excretions. This observation indicates continuous multiplication of the virus in the organs of such animals, which look like normal individuals in spite of their chronic infection. Maternal transmission of LCM infection leads to a stable, parentheses, parasitism between virus and body. It was also observed that mice infected, parentheses, in the womb would develop practically no LCM virus antibodies. Attempts to demonstrate neutralizing antibodies in the blood of such animals using customary techniques gave essentially negative results, unquote. In this round of studies on LCM virus, Traub published further insight into the immunosuppression of LCM, the affinity for the lymph nodes, the lack of antibodies with no abnormal blood work, the rapid acceleration of cancers like leukemia and lymphomatosis. And he compared LCM virus to some of the murine cancer viruses. He had already shown back in 1941 how LCM virus would accelerate a rapid spike in cancer from mice born infected from their mothers, demonstrating how LCM infections can maintain persistence through many successive generations, cursing the health of future generations with slow chronic infections, neurological disease, and a massive rise in cancers. FAO assignments in Iran and Turkey. After stepping down from the Tübingen Institute, Eric Traub took on new assignments for the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, of the United Nations to set up an FMD laboratory at the Razi Institute of Serum and Vaccines in Tehran, Iran, lasting from 1963 to 1966. Upon his arrival and setting up to study FMD in Iran, Traub voiced great pleasure in watching FMD spread like wildfire among the Iranian peasantry, freely spreading its pestilence unaffected by mass vaccination, indicating this may have been one of his weaponized strains of FMD virus. Quote, a study of serological variation of foot and mouth disease virus is particularly rewarding in a large country where the disease can spread rather freely, more or less unhampered by mass vaccination and sanitary measures, and where a considerable part of the flock owners still lead a nomadic life, unquote. He collaborated with several Iranian researchers on FMD virus for years beyond the mission, with Iranian counterparts like Abbas Shafi, H. Ramyar, and G.K. Kanhai. Upon further analysis, Traub's research in Iran had clear offensive weapons potential. In one paper with G.K. Kanhai, that's K-A-N-H-A-I, he lays out the implications of the work to include, quote, increase of potency of the causative agent, unquote. Quote, virus adaptation to certain species of animals and escalation or decrease of infectivity and pathogenicity for other species, unquote. And, quote, different affinity of virus strains for certain cells, parentheses cardiac FMD, and, quote, differences in susceptibility among individual animals of the same species, persistent infection among other factors. In earlier chapters, I mentioned Traub having shown one of his Iranian counterparts how to adapt various pathogens, for example, rickettsia, or blood parasites to new animal hosts using a co-infecting animal virus, which Kanhai tried out using the Sendai virus, S-E-N-D-A-I, of the influenza group of viruses to adapt the Babesia-like blood parasite Filaria parva, or East Coast fever, to new animals it didn't previously infect, like hamsters. Traub would take another mission for the FAO to Turkey to assist them in the setup of an FMD lab there, which took him from 1969 to 1972. He would then return to Germany to take up research at the University of Munich, headed by director and former deputy under Traub's institute in Tübingen, Dr. Anton Mayer, that's M-A-Y-R. This time, he was back to the virus that started the whole thing, the virus of lymphocytic chorioamnionitis. Back to LCM virus, quote, who started the whole thing. On October 16, 1972, Traub gave an introductory speech at a symposium on LCM virus, lymphocytic chorioamnionitis virus, and other arenaviruses, which had been held at the Heinrich Pette Institute for Experimental Virology and Immunology at the University of Hamburg. This would begin the final phase of Eric Traub's career in virology, and he would focus specifically on the LCM virus for the remainder of his life. In his introductory speech at the symposium, Traub made some interesting statements and might be considered a cryptic recollection of some of Traub's veiled achievements with LCM in biological weapons work. Traub mentioned that aside from the typical arboviruses, that is EEE, tick encephalitis, etc., LCM virus could be transmitted by a variety of arthropods, such as mosquitoes, bedbugs, and ticks, while the LCM virus could also be grown in cultures of tick cells. He also mentioned the ability to transmit LCM virus with the parasitic nematode Trichinella spiralis. The LCM virus itself he described as extremely labile, able to adapt to just about any situation and produce so many variants that it made reproducing any experimental work very difficult, since it was always changing. He then described the immune tolerance phenomenon and the chronic neurodegenerative disease that became more pronounced in each subsequent generation. He also notes that immune-tolerant, chronically infected mothers invariably give birth to infected newborns who harbored and transmitted considerable quantities of virulent virus in their secretions and excretions, despite not showing any outward signs of disease and producing little to no antibodies. Quote, congenitally infected mice look like normal individuals for many months, most of them for their entire life, in spite of the fact that they carry large amounts of virus in their organs and blood and discharge virus continuously in their nasal secretions, urine, feces, milk, and sperm. They have no effective mechanism for virus clearance. And in parentheses, blood work is essentially normal. In contrast to mice with acute adult infection, they can readily pass the virus to normal mice by contact, parentheses, nose to nose, with the milk or bisexual intercourse. In tolerant females, every successive litter becomes infected congenitally. No matter whether the animal was mated with a normal male or a tolerant one, all embryos in each successive litter are infected, unquote. The mice born from infected mothers would look indistinguishable from healthy mice, develop no antibodies, and remain infected for life. This might have been a favorable form of immunity if not for the fact that the lifelong infection was not harmless, even if they appeared healthy at first. Traub observed that as the infected mice born from an immune-tolerant mother would appear healthy and like other healthy, uninfected mice, but eventually they began to show signs of chronic neurodegenerative disease, kidney and organ damage, which had been thought to be partially of an autoimmune reaction for some, but also pointed out that the antigen accumulating in the organs and brain is likewise at play. Another damaging effect of these persistent lifelong infections with LCM virus in congenitally infected mice was that as they matured, they would develop cancers, leukemia, lymphomatosis, in increasing frequency with each subsequent generation, occurring far more frequently and at a younger age as the mice continued through generations, eventually causing cancer in approximately 1 in 2 mice, that is 50% in future generations. Quote, the interaction between persistent LCM virus infection and leukemia in mice, and to a lesser extent in guinea pigs, has been the subject of numerous publications. We reported in 1941 that lymphatic leukemia was more frequent and appeared at a younger age in persistently infected mice from the Princeton colony than in LCM virus-free controls derived from the same stock. Later, leukemia was also seen in 1 of 2 wild mice persistently infected with LCM virus, which Dr. Haas had sent me from the USA. Lastly, Traub addressed some of the scientists who in 1967 had contested immune tolerance because they were able to find evidence of some antibodies from immune-tolerant mice. They rejected the idea of the immune system recognizing the virus as self, quote-unquote, since often the term was used in the context of the immune system's distinguishing between self and non-self, but the condition was more complex than this. It also had to do with the immune system being forcefully suppressed into tolerating harmful pathogens because it can't fight back, rather than tolerating them as though the immune system recognizes them as part of the self tissue. Traub did not create the term immune tolerance, however, and he explained it more like it was an immune paralysis. But he suggested that these two sides are in some sense half right, as the underlying condition is marked more by active suppression of the immune system by antigen, rather than merely the immune system recognizing the pathogens as the same as self tissues. But in the early stages of life, this may have been more the case since its own tissue is infected through the mother passed to the newborn. And when the immune system matures later in life, it begins to recognize these infectious agents as something other than itself. Final round of LCM and the death of a bioweaponeer. With a notable eye-opening speech presented at the 1972 Symposium on LCM Virus, Traub was able to put the remainder of his life to further study of LCM Virus. From 1974 to 1981, Traub would publish six more papers on LCM Virus. He would study the progression of the disease in the later generations of mice persistently infected, born with compromised immune systems, which had been baptized immune tolerance. From 1975 to 1976, just as Lyme arthritis was in its early stages of being admitted and acknowledged as a disease, Traub was studying the neurodegenerative effects of LCM termed, quote, early and late onset disease, unquote. Essentially, a progressive central nervous system disease that would mirror the neurological disease seen in Lyme disease. Lyme disease involved not only spirochetes, but also the onset of persistent viral infections in parallel to the spirochete infection. And the spirochetes caused immunosuppression and autoimmune-like reactions comparable to lupus erythematosus, E-R-Y-T-H-E-M-A-T-O-S-U-S, erythematosus. The spirochete infection reawakened dormant viruses already within the host during the early stages of infection, and this is mirrored by the symptoms. LCM was the animal model of these dormant viruses, comparable to Epstein-Barr virus or human herpes virus 6, to name a few, and as the spirochetes shed toxic lipid proteins into the blood, it would disable the immune system, and these sleeping viruses awaken from dormancy, establishing chronic, persistent viral infections in the manner of Traub's LCM virus. These studies gave Traub a comparable model to the progression of the biological weapons ravaging the American population. In 1976, he began to study the antigen content found in the brains of mice, showing that mice accumulated viral antigen in their brains and played a role in the central nervous system disease it produced. He also studied the effects on the kidneys, which often led to kidney disease, and the feeding habits of the mice. He found that mice that ate less frequently lived longer than those that did not. In Traub's final two papers, Traub addressed some of the debates about the concept of immune tolerance in relation to chronic persistent infections like LCM that actively suppress the immune system. Since other researchers would occasionally find limited antibodies in these mice, but it was sporadic and these would disappear and reappear. It was later demonstrated that this occurs because of the antigen mutating and continuously changing its biochemical composition to evade the immune response, and this was known as antigenic variation. It was the antigen leading the immune system in an endless game of cat and mouse. This exhausts and overwhelms the immune system into an inadequate state, and a slow chronic disease follows. Traub concluded his career demonstrating the reality of severe lifelong persistent infections causing slow, debilitating chronic diseases producing little to no antibodies, no abnormal blood work, and little to no outward inflammation. Traub conclusively proves how individuals can be quite sick yet appear healthy to their physicians. His lifelong study of the LCM virus demonstrates that there is an entire spectrum of disease marked by immunosuppression rather than inflammation, and the autoimmune-like reactions were more or less the effect of the antigen fusing and proliferating tissues, organs, and brain, so that the term tolerance does not entirely do justice, as it appears to be a state where the immune system is persistently overwhelmed by a virus for which the antigens actively suppresses the immune system into a state of burnout. Traub's final round with LCM virus contains many inconvenient truths with vast implications for the sad state of the public health system's response to persistent infections that caused immune tolerance, like Lyme disease, post-vaccinal syndromes, and the unnecessary stigma attached to chronic disease today. Traub's scientific research would prove to the many healthcare providers denying the complaints of those with chronic diseases lacking antibodies and inflammation that chronic immunosuppression and persistent infections go hand in hand. They are marked by an absence of antibodies, no abnormal blood work or immune cell count, and without visible inflammation. It would call to light the fact that antigenic material or spike protein used in routine vaccination does not imply a harmless process, while many antigens are themselves self-replicating agents and can accumulate in tissues, organs, and brains to a large degree. it would call serious attention to the triple signature of Traub's strategic bioweapons, chronic disease, mental illness, and cancer, now ravaging American life and robbing the lives of loved ones, families, and friends while prematurely smothering an otherwise long and prosperous future. On May 17, 1985, Eric Traub passed away quietly in his sleep at 78 years of age, concluding a lifetime of virus research and bioweaponeering. Traub had worn the hats of many superpowers, the Soviet Union, Britain, USA, and Nazi Germany, and likewise as a skilled bioweaponeer. If they wanted weapons of war, he gave them all more than they bargained for. End of chapter 15. We have one chapter left, and it is called Tainted Immunity. And with that, we will wrap it up for now. Thank you for joining me, and thank you to A.W. Finnegan for his excellent work and for allowing me to present it here. I'm John O'Loughlin, and I hope you will continue to join me on McDuff Lives Podcast.